There's only one place to watch Blues playoffs correctly, and that's Gateway Sports Emporium. With over 20 big screens and seating for over 200, there is plenty of room for the whole gang. Wear your favorite Blues jersey to receive draft beer specials on game days. And every time the Blues score, be sure to celebrate with one of their homemade Blue Note or Moose shots at their 90-foot wraparound bar. You can even watch the game from their patio and be sure to get there early and stay late for their three-hour pre- and post-game parties. Gateway Sports Emporium, 719 North 2nd Street on the Landing.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
Scott Kazmir start.
Some kids have it, some kids don't, some of us are.
Old Cassie had a night, no question.
Not after the way the Heat played.
Mom won't watch the news at night. There's too much stuff.
Are you excited for the Dubs hosting KD?
Yeah, boy. If there's one thing I'm excited about now, it's the Dubs hosting KD.
Nice.
Is that the Warriors hosting Kevin Durant? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Good work.
It's Ryan Kelly Morning After.
Seen much of it.
This is, well, it starts tonight.
Well, I haven't seen much of the NBA playoffs.
Oh. Well, come on over tonight. We'll watch game one.
Well, I'm busy. He'll rub your shoulder. And
yeah,
then,
watch some NBA
busy,
plays.
Busy.
It's Ryan Kelly Morning After. This is CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Timothy Michael McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, Douglas Elvin Vaughn with you. Brett Hedekin with us in this segment talking Blues Sharks. He is the San Jose Sharks radio analyst, brought to you by Gateway Sports Emporium. Rick Hummel at 8:30 and Kelly Chase, brought to you by GFI Digital at 9 o'clock. Your emails, the morning after at InsideSTL.com. Two Bud Bash tickets for the Cardinal game tomorrow night, so a great prize. The morning after at InsideSTL.com. Blues winning last night by a score of 2-1. I always like to stop by Blues Talk on STLToday.com and see the enthusiasm from the fans who post there. And the top of the page following last night's game, a complaint that the game wasn't exciting enough.
That the Blues game wasn't exciting.
That's right.
Well, what did they want? They got a one-goal game.
He had that. What do you he had want? That puck tink off the post and just flutter around. That's enough to give you a heart attack.
Yes, it is. They can't all be 5-4.
I think you're going to see a lot more of that total of goals closer to 3 than you're going to see from what we saw that Star series. You know, when the Stars and Blues would score, you're like, okay, it's like playing the 2000 Rams. It's going to be a 38-35 game. NFL equivalent. This, I have a feeling, is going to be much more close to like going up against those Ravens defense teams where you're just like any goal could be the game winner. It
better
could actually hold up.
But also I think the Sharks, they're more physical and they play tighter defense. Yeah. They just don't give the Blues the space. They don't want to put it in the zone at all.
It's like, in, if you guys remember game one, I don't know how you felt about it against the Stars, I felt like that was encouraging because the Blues did not play well at all and almost won the game. They tied it with like 8 minutes left in the third period in Dallas, if my memory's correct. And then the Stars got the eventual game-winning goal 4 minutes later or so. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, God, the Blues played, I think, their worst game of the Stanley Cup playoffs to date through 8 games right there, and they almost won it. Last night, the Blues did not play a good game, but they did win it. Now, I don't know what San Jose might be thinking. I don't know what changes they can make. Pierre LeBrun on ESPN.com was talking about a possibility of making a change that they had been playing with in the first round against the Kings. He writes, no offense to Chris Tierney's unit for the Sharks, which played well the previous round against the Predators, but if the Blues can get Laterra's unit with Tarasenko and Schwartz out there, or any of their top three lines matched up against San Jose's third line, this is an area St. Louis can exploit throughout the Western Conference Finals. It's a series pitting two evenly matched teams. Games are going to be won by hair, the way it was Sunday with the Blues winning 2-1. And the Sharks perhaps unlucky after outshooting the hosts 32-23 and owning the larger share of grade A looks. The one thing I would say is that the Blues had a lot of odd man rushes, first and third period in particular. Not a whole lot doing in the second period outside of the turnover from Burns that Laterra beat Jones on, and I think that would be quantified as a
softy.
Yeah. But, you know, Sharks coach Pete DeBoer afterwards said, you know, it doesn't matter. We still got to score more than one goal. Scoring one goal is not going to cut it. A lot of attention this morning in the San Jose Mercury News and the San Francisco Chronicle given to the early whistle on the puck that was still moving and then slid through Brian Elliott's legs. That was quite a break for the Blues.
That's a big break, but I've seen that, what, five, six times this season. It happens.
She was on the other foot, though. We'd be talking about it a hell of a lot more.
Agreed, but, I mean, that happens that the official can't see the puck, so he blows the play dead because he thinks that the puck is being controlled.
And the Blues had one call back when, you know, Bergie got his popo into JoJo.
Nice.
That didn't look anything illegal to me. I mean, that looked like the same kind of bumping and pushing they do on every goal they score.
I mean, when you get to the third period, too, in a one-goal game, like, unless it's an odd man rush, if it's one of those where they're just peppering the goalie, there's a scrum in front, there's five, six guys, you don't even know what happened. Did he score? Like, even the announcers, you can't even... It is so violent in front of the goal in these playoff games.
Which makes what David Backes is doing throughout...
Ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, again, he did it last night. Third power play goal. And they just keep firing the puck, and he just keeps deflecting it past,
I mean, the hand-eye coordinate, remember
Crawford,
in the last... Where he kind of jumped out of the way and then spun around and scored. I had someone ask me... I forget who it was, one of the writers from L.A., I guess. Do people in St. Louis love David Backes? And I'm like, not as much as they should, right? He's one of those guys.
Well, I think they love him.
Do you think so?
I think the love is, if it were a graph, it would be skyrocketing.
Now,
over the last three or four weeks.
I think at times he's a whipping boy. He's, you know, not getting enough. Defensively, he's outstanding, and there are games where – he's playing great defense.
And he's been the captain of a team that up until this year has really disappointed in the postseason. So that's something that, you know, it's a weird place to look back on now. But it was, if I'm not mistaken, was it 2 weeks ago today that the Blues won Game 7 against the Blackhawks? I think it was a Monday night, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Cucky was out here, Doug. Was it 3 weeks? Well, either way, you get the idea.
Oh,
it's been
cares?
A while ago.
Yes.
And it was a 2-2 going into the third period. And I recall tweeting out, because it's just the first thing that came to mind, 20 minutes to define an era. Because if they lose, I think back, and whether it's right or wrong, I think Backes is gone, Hitchcock's not coming back, whether it's his choice or it's mutual, whatever the case might be. And they win, beat the Stars, and here they are now three wins away from the organization's first Stanley Cup Finals since 1970. So we'll talk it over with Brett Hedekin, we'll talk it over with Rick Hummel, we'll talk it over with Kelly Chase, and we have your emails, email of the day. All playoffs there have been quick stoppages. Get over it, San Jose. Doug, that comes from the troll.
Okay. I liked it when Backes said a week or so ago, when these guys shoot, as long as they keep it below my neck, I'm okay. He just doesn't want to get hit with the neck.
Like what happened to Walter.
But you can tell Backes is an extremely intelligent guy. He's always got just the perfect answer for any kind of question. He talks like he's going to be a United States senator or something. He's going to have a big career when his playing days are over, no matter what he does. He's just the perfect guy to be the captain of a team, of any team.
You think of the pregame interviews he always does, like before the series gets underway.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, anyone is feeling stress, tension, whatever. And he's answering, and the guy said, thanks, David, you bet. You know, he's friendly and warm and those things.
Yeah,
be easy.
He just couldn't be a better leader, I don't think.
Doug, how come Backes can get credit for deflecting a puck into the goal, but a Major League Baseball player is incapable of fouling a ball off on purpose? Stick that in your pipe, guy.
Well, Backes is trying to deflect it, and the baseball players are not trying to hit foul balls. They're trying to hit fair balls.
But that's the Wildwood Whisker Biscuit.
Okay.
Go ahead and smoke
it.
He put it in your pipe, if I might say. Now you smoke it.
Brett Hedekin going to join us. He's brought to you by Gateway Sports Emporium. They have 20 big screen TVs. They're on the landing, seating for over 200 people with views of multiple TVs. I've been down there. The place is really cool. Gateway's drink special start 2 hours prior and run for 2 hours after the game, including half-price drafts and select appetizers. All kinds of deals going on. Also ask about each game's food specials for those in gear. Like them on Facebook or follow them on Twitter to receive one free drink. And anyone in a Blues jersey gets a $3 16-ounce draft all game. Pre-game specials, half-price apps, as well as well drinks. It is Gateway Sports Emporium on the landing. Check it out. Big Blues bar. So if you're looking for a place to go before or after a Blues game, Gateway Sports Emporium would be an outstanding choice. Doug, quit being a Backus lemming. Thanks. That's from the 314.
What is there to not like about David Backus? Mm-hmm. Is there anything at all not to love about David Backus?
I agree with you.
Backus had 21 goals in 79 regular season games. He has 7 and 15 playoff games. He finna get a big contract. That's from the 314.
Yeah. Every team in the league would love to have David Backus.
Do you agree, though?
Whether they all
that,
are going to pay 7 or 8 million.
Under, until the playoffs, where he's been great, he's been a little underappreciated?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
he has.
Me too.
He's never really been a scoring machine, although I think he had 30 one year, didn't he? I have stats here in front of me. I mean, he's the prototypical type of player you want in the playoffs. Who will put his face in front of a slap shot. He'll do absolutely
that's
anything.
You know,
he'll fight. He'll score
goals. We agree, that's
goals.
His office.
I know the same office.
Here is David Backus on what makes these Stanley Cup playoffs different than the others he has played in.
Well, I think we've played long enough where we can kind of get into a rhythm and a routine, and the other ones seem to be over before you even, you know, got into that sort of mode of, you know, day in and day out of what you need to do, what you need to, you know, do on the off days and get into a nice rhythm. And we've been able to do that playing every other day here. You know, I think it's one of those things where you say we've got nothing to lose. Let's go out there and put it all on the line. And, you know, I've had a lot of interviews and things like that, but my line mates and the defensemen I'm out there with and, you know, the goaltender have saved my butt a lot to keep me in the out of the sad interview. So give a lot of credit to them and just able to be my piece of the puzzle and try to do it to my best of my ability and let the rest, you know, fall into place. And we've made a pretty picture most of the time out there.
15 games Blues have played now in the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is just a little shy of about 20% of the regular season would be, and they're 9-6. And if they were 9-6 over a stretch in the regular season, it wouldn't be catching much attention. But 9-6 against the caliber of opposition in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it feels like something is just right with this team. And I would imagine the building will be buzzing tomorrow night if you can go up 2-0. Man, God, that's huge.
I'll give you a 2-lead bulge.
Excuse me, bulge?
It would give you a two-game lead bulge. So you go ahead with your little comment.
Boy, you really worked to get that in there. Suicide mission, if you ask me.
No.
1-1 has been the series after the first two rounds with the Blackhawks and Stars, with the road team winning each one of those. So this is a big opportunity for the Blues against a team that played better than anybody else in the league on the road this year.
Do we agree that San Jose, just by appearance in that first game, and I know we're not watching a lot of, I mean, except for Doug, a lot of shark hockey outside of when they face the Blues, but sure. It appears to be a better team than Dallas, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Different, certainly a different team than Dallas.
I agree with that. But
Dallas is the highest scoring team in the league. They just don't have a goalie.
They don't have a goalie, and they also defensive. I mean, they don't have great defensemen either. That's a bad combination, especially for the playoffs. I'm not – they're a really good team, don't get me wrong. I watched San Jose. I thought the Blues were a little fortunate to win that game because I thought San Jose got the best of the play. And that makes me wonder if this is, you know, going to be as easy as some people think because the Blues won the first game. That's all.
I don't know. I don't know if it's ever going to be easy at this point. I think every game is probably going to be.
Yeah, I do. You know, the thing that I'll take away from it is similar in the Dallas series, the Blues didn't play a great game and they won. But is the reason the Blues didn't play a great game because of San Jose or is it because of themselves? I don't know. You know, I felt like the Dallas was on them. I didn't feel like they were just being outplayed by the Dallas Stars in Game 1. I realize after 15 games, a lot of these blend together, and I'm speaking of something that's, you know, whatever, 15, 17 days old, whatever the hell it was, a Friday night in Dallas. But, you know, specific to last night, you know, if you watch all of that and you just subtract about 30 seconds of the entire game for the three goals, you would go, yeah, the Sharks probably won that game. And yet the Blues were able to get one where they didn't play well. And I think similar, hopefully, to the Chicago series, but ideally with a different result, they play better in Game 2. If you remember, the Blues lost Game 2, but they felt like they played a better game, even though the result was off. And I think that's how San Jose feels, but at the same time, they're going, God, we did play well. We did play really well in the second period and had so many opportunities in the final 5 minutes of the third period, and we couldn't get it done. And that's got to be frustrating. So, you know, I don't know. That's when you can win a game that you don't necessarily have your best, that's pretty damn encouraging. The question, though, is it because of something San Jose did, or is it because of the Blues not necessarily firing on all cylinders?
San Jose had some jump. They had some want to, some buy-in, sprinkled in with a little resiliency, and you got Sharks hockey.
How's their forecheck?
Their forecheck, I liked it. I liked it a lot. The one thing they do is forecheck. They backcheck and sidecheck.
Doug, something I heard on Friday that I'm not over regarding Jennings talking about caller Jordan during Foot Fetish Friday.
Okay.
Jay said, quote, I wish I could cut off her feet and hang them on a mantle.
Oh, he said that?
How about that whole thing? Are we going to bring that back?
I'm going to block that out.
He said that.
I told him he could just make some sort of cast out of it, couldn't he?
No.
So the next dismemberment in the city, chief suspect.
We see her hopping around someday. We'll know what happened. Just take a little mold of it. He probably would, except that the fetish is just so darn mild.
Right.
What was he adding? M&Ms or licorice, like
no.
In the past?
No, it was a sophisticated and elegant Foot Fetish Friday.
So there was no kicking of the jowls?
Nope.
No. I missed that.
80-year-old women with the feet on his face.
Ooh, Seika and Kitten Navidad.
I remember that. We had to pretend like they were attractive.
Yeah, I've been doing that for 12 years. Tim, this is the playoffs, baby. Sometimes the team that plays the best game doesn't win. Mr. Gorbachev, bring down that wall.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall.
God, that's nice. Mario in Chicago says, yeah. Kid Els, yo.
Okay, we didn't need that.
I think it's appropriate because if they win the Stanley Cup, they should name a street after that guy in St. Louis. All the disappointment over the years, not that it's going to happen, but if it does, he'll be the chief reason. Name a street after him.
Which street?
I'll let you pick it out.
All right. Well, we could have one in our neighborhood, I guess. I've changed the name of our street to Elliott.
Yeah,
Elliott Way.
It's taken care of.
Okay, that was easy.
We have a ceremony and stuff and a ribbon cutting?
Might.
Sunset Hills.
That's right.
Okay.
There's hockey fans there.
As long as you're on it.
We've got a big Blues flag now in front of our house.
Oh, do you? John Vaughn put that up?
No, Nick Vaughn put that. So maybe it'd be very appropriate if we had Elliott Way right down our street.
Sup, man, child? Any cake this weekend?
Now, what does that mean?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Mario. He just texted it in. From Not a St. Gabe's fan. Shut up, Mario. This text inbox, sometimes they just kind of...
They sniff at each other, yeah. Don't they? They don't
it's
even
like
know each
it's like the fan pin.
There's a lot of sniffing. All right. Well, I guess that'll do it for this show.
No, I think he was just... I think he was just emptying the text box.
Okay.
I don't think it's the end.
No, probably not.
Guys, we should rename Market Street Deke Dotum Avenue. Thanks, Hunchback of Von Castle.
No, that'd be bad. I don't think that's a good...
What about this? Doug King's Highway will become Kid L's Highway.
Yeah. Okay. I'm serious about that.
Well, you might be getting a little ahead of yourself.
You're going to be held accountable for jinxing it.
I'm just saying if it happens, and I already put the disclaimer, and I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen. But if it does, and he continues to play this way, he will have single-handedly, with a lot of help from his teammates, but he'll be the main reason. He's the main reason why they're at this point, correct? You agree with that, the main reason?
their most valuable player, I would say that.
Name a street after him. Okay. Stop being so.
Should we name a street after Kurt Warner and David Fries? I mean, they were the big reasons why we won championships.
Why not?
Got a lot of streets here.
I didn't have the same clout that I have now.
Right.
I say it into this microphone. You already said you'll name one in Sunset Hills. I'm sure I'm going to get texts from a few different locations. There'll be Kid L's ways all over the proper St. Louis greater
shrub
situation.
Tim, let's me, you, and Doug get an MMF session in. I'm a chick. Trust me. 100% legit. Thanks. That's from Mrs. Fenton Breeder.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second, Tim.
A lot of hot broads at the golf tournament on Friday. But what do you say, 60, 40 women?
It was almost all girls. You really had to look hard to find a fella.
They're like Hawaiian Tropic models?
Oh, most of them, yeah. Yeah, legit.
Chaney, the lesbian, and Buck Swope were driving around in a cart. Now, you rolled your eyes. What?
Yeah, that Buck Swope is a snootful. Taking pictures, constantly taking pictures. He's kind of a shutter spook.
What?
Who was he taking pictures for?
What did you just call him?
Shutter spook.
What does that mean?
Someone who takes a lot of pictures and probably shouldn't be.
Can you call him a shutter bug?
Shutter spook.
Shutter bug.
What was he taking pictures for?
He has a magazine called Swope.
Does he really? Kind of a snootful.
You never saw Swope magazine?
I haven't seen it.
A lot of newsstands around.
I've missed him.
Yeah, he and Janie the lesbian were just driving around the golf course together.
Just watching.
Yep.
Part of the gallery.
Yep. Then I shot up there. Notice I shot up there.
Yeah, you didn't just drive.
And I was with Anna Marie, caller Jordan, and Joe Statz. You know Joe Statz? He loves America.
I don't believe I do.
Yeah, Joe Statz, who had had a taste. He had had a nip, just a little nip. Of the, what was it, the cooking sherry that they had out there?
That seemed to be what they had.
And I think it was a very short par three. When foursomes would arrive on the tee, he would say, celebrity golf swing, and then he would go up there and hit a shot for them. Except nobody knew
who he was.
Right.
And who the hell is this guy? Who is he, Tim?
He's a friend of mine.
He just keeps stats all the time.
Named Joe Statz, and he co-hosted one show. The morning after Ben Curtis won the British in 2003.
Oh, well, that was a big moment that we all have forgotten, you know, right there just a couple weeks later.
Where, I don't remember Joe Statz co-hosting.
No.
I think you were out.
But that made him a celebrity, that just that one show. He's really built his career around that one. And so now he's taking golf shots. All he really wanted to do was take a free swing, right?
Now, what was it? Was it a best ball?
Scramble, baby, scramble.
Well, you don't want to give a shot away to some guy that just says...
You don't have to give it away. It's a freebie.
Yep, that's right. Celebrity golf shot. Celebrity golf shot.
Usually it's somebody like Tom Watson's up there, the smiling redhead's up there, ready to take a shot with you.
Or Annette Bening.
Maybe Jeff Sluman. Someone like that. You'll say, sure. Sure, slugger. Show us the way. And the pros will take a shot for you.
Or Annette Bening.
Well, we're happy to have that one. Hope we can hit that putt.
That's what you do?
It's usually how these things go. Everybody laughs at everything the pro says, laughs hysterically. Whatever they say, what club are you going to use? Oh, 9-iron. Oh, boy, can he hit him.
You have to say things,
yeah,
like,
say things
boy,
like,
can he hit him?
I don't think I can get there with a 6. This guy, this fellow over here is using a 9-iron. Whoa, can he hit him? That's usually how those things go.
And how did it go with the Joe Statz?
A look of confusion as to who this guy is and why is he in my golf bag taking one of my clubs.
Hmm. And he stayed there for a long period of time?
Yeah, I think this went on for about 8 foursomes.
Oh. And there's nobody there to put this knucklehead in place.
Well, I mean, I'm sitting there watching the whole thing, so people probably thought it was an approved...
You gave your nod of approval. Why didn't you hit the shots for
me? I was having a little nip myself.
So what?
When you're a CEO and you're having a nip, you can't be taking shots.
Right.
You're running a whole event. He's running a whole event.
Okay.
Probably had a little walkie-talkie.
Absolutely.
It's Tim taking a nip.
Yep. Like I'm working the floor at Banana Republic. There's a little IFB.
Yeah, I've seen them. Now, were you afraid that you weren't going to be able to reach the green without your dad's
help? You know, I notice on the same hole, Big Al appeared. Mm-hmm. He had also had a nip. since around 7 in the morning of the cooking
tree. Yeah, he got a good early start.
And this was about a 115-yard par 3. Joe Stats put his first celebrity golf shot within 5 feet of the cup.
Did he know?
Big Al, for whatever reason, took out a 3-wood.
Yeah. Looking for a little more length.
On a 115-yard hole, and just shot it right over the green into the next fairway.
Oh, he hit it straight, at least, huh?
Now, 3-wood, I believe, it depends on who you are. It's a club that you're going to hit around 225 and up. So on a 115-yard hole, might be a little too much club.
You might want to club down. You may want to. He just wanted to be sure he got there. You know, never up, never in. Most people don't use enough club, Tim. Most people think they're a little bit bigger deal than they are, and they leave it short.
Yep. All right.
So if I
most folks, whatever club you think you ought to use, have one lower. Hit so a little bit more club.
If I'm playing in a tournament, they have Corey Pavin playing one, and then he hits it. What do I say again?
You say, "What are you using there, bro?" And you laugh nervously, just hoping that he'll respond to you, and he'll say something like, "Well, I'm going to use a wedge." You go, oh, boy, this fella can hit him. Yeah, I'll use about a 5-iron. I wish I could hit him like you.
It is kind of like
that kind of thing.
It is also the same mentality in a media scrum if the pro athlete makes a joke.
Anything. Just the funniest thing you've ever heard in your life. Muhammad Ali was that way, especially. Whatever he said, people laughed like it was the funniest darn thing they'd ever heard in their life.
Why do you hate boxing?
I don't. Yeah, it's like that. Just laugh. Yeah, that was a great one. Wasn't that funny, really, but we'll laugh.
Was there a question about intensity again last night for Hitch? Can I hear that again? Cal May?
Yeah.
If you don't,
you're looking for a reporter's query.
Yes, number 4.
What were your thoughts on the intensity of this game with your players?
What do you mean by that?
Doug, the Morning After fan page isn't the only page on Facebook that deals with drama. The Blues Lounge. Are you on the Blues Lounge?
I don't think so.
It says, now that the euphoria of last night has worn off, let's go over a few things.
Somebody's dressing us down now? Like we don't have the right to be happy?
No.
That we should say, oh, what, well, you know, they didn't play their best game, so it really doesn't count for much.
What it means is...
What in the world?
What it means is the puckheads will now actually analyze the game in a manner you or I probably couldn't because we don't understand the game. Okay. That's what it means.
Well, it's number one, Rally Boob's post will be deleted. It got out of hand last night with people messaging women asking for nudes. Now there will be no Rally Boobs.
So people watched the game, and they saw a bit of cleavage behind the San Jose bench. So they immediately contacted other girls they might know asking for nude pictures. Is that what that remark was about?
You'll have to ask the administrator at the Blues Lounge, but it sounds like you're on target.
Chum in the water, Doug. That's what it is.
Number two, we were lucky to sneak out with a win last night. We must play much better hockey going forward, or I will have to shave this beard off, and I don't want to do that.
You must play better hockey. They just beat one of the best teams in the league with outstanding goaltending, terrific defense, timely scoring, and we must play better or this fella's not happy.
And finally, no personal attacks, calling people a-holes, MFers, and I don't even know what this word is not acceptable.
I want to know what the word is if you don't know what it means.
I really don't even know how I could attempt to try and say what it is.
Take a look at it.
Rick Hummel is on the appliances counter phone lines. See, that's the word.
Morning, Commish. Hi, boys.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine.
Good. The Cat, you were out there in Los Angeles, both in Anaheim and L.A. Cardinals going 4-2 on the trip. The Angels are a mess. A better test against the Dodgers, although they did not face Clayton Kershaw. They still were silenced by the wonderful Scott Kazmir.
It's the same thing.
Scott Kazmir and
it doesn't.
Okay.
1-1A.
I'll withdraw that. They are 8 games back of the Cubs after the 4-2 road trip. Your analysis at this point, sir?
I think there's a little uptick in the starting pitching with Leak having had 2 strong games in a row. Wainwright had a little backed up the last time, so it'll be interesting to watch him pitch Wednesday. A couple more games got away with some defensive hijinks, so they're going to have to clean that up still. I think offensively, I like the way Wong swung the bat. That might be the biggest thing that I took out of the last two or three games, is he's making better contact, and where you can maybe leave him in there every day now for a while.
The defensive issues, I think that's a legitimate thing, especially infield issues where, you know, there's been a bunch of errors that have been costly. But I agree with you. I think Leak was good. And to me, if the Cardinals are going to be anywhere close to a playoff team, they've got to get better starting pitching, more consistent. You know, last year was, you know, quality start, quality start, quality start. We're seeing better pitching, but it's not quite there. I agree that Wainwright is a mystery what he is. But do you think they can get to that point where that starting rotation is what at least I thought it would be?
Well, you look at it and you say, who would you rather have in there? Who could you possibly get to make that better? I mean, Walker and Martinez have lost seven starts in a row. That's kind of piled up on us a little bit, and they haven't all been bad starts. Most of them have been fairly good, but they've still lost seven in a row, Walker four and Martinez three. So they are having to make a few more pitches than they should have to make because of the defensive pratfalls behind
them.
In
the starting rotation's ERA is, what, a run higher than it was last year? And I know it's early, and they have time to correct it.
Well, you have one guy who's almost at seven in Wainwright. So that's the only difference right there, probably. They're okay. I mean, they played pretty well in most of those games on the trip. A couple times they didn't, and the Dodgers took advantage.
What do you see Leak doing differently this last two starts to help him be successful?
I think getting ahead in the count. He's not a strikeout-type pitcher, so he needs to get ahead in the count where he can move the ball around a little bit, make hitters swinging balls they don't want to swing at. But I think just pitching ahead where it's 0-1, 1-2 rather than the other way around.
You know, with Aledmys Diaz, I mean, he's off to an historically good start. And there's been so much good. There's been some defensive issues, too. What struck me the other day, along with a home run and a double, he had three errors. And after the game, he kind of found the media and answered all the questions about his defense. And the way he did it, with his head high, didn't make excuses, said, you know, I cost us runs. I have to be better. I will be. It just told me that there's a young man who I think is in the process of becoming a major leaguer, that there's the process that you kind of have to go through. Do you see it that way? Because I think that's a positive sign, the way he's handling the ups and downs, which, you know, a lot of guys have to go through.
Well, he's a very classy young man. Actually, he's older than Puig, for instance, by about 6 months. Even though Diaz has been in the big leagues only a little while and Puig's been in 3 years, Diaz is not 22 or 23. He's 25, coming up on 26. So he's been around a little bit, although not at this level. But, yeah, he's a very good man.
And now Peralta is, I guess, starting to swing and throw a little bit. What in the world do they do when he comes back? You have to have his defense at short, don't you? And yet how do you not have Diaz in the lineup?
Well, Diaz will be in the lineup somewhere, and Peralta will be at short. You're right about that, Doug. Peralta's got maybe this homestand to show he can hit well enough where they can send him out on a rehab option by the end of the homestand, where they're gone then for a week to Washington and Milwaukee. And maybe by the end of that, which will be right about the 1st of June, he'll be able to come back. But Peralta's going to play shortstop 5-6 days a week when he's back, and Diaz could play second, although if Wong gets hot, you'd like to leave him there. Diaz could play third, and Carpenter could play first. Well, you have a whole passel of first basemen over there already. I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But they'll find a spot for him. They're not good enough. They can have a guy hitting 380 sitting on the bench.
You think there's a chance that it can be day-to-day? They'll just rotate guys? Because I agree with you. I think Wong is on the upswing right now, and so you want to keep that going. And at the same time, You have to keep Diaz's bat in there.
Well, I agree. And ultimately, you're going to have Tommy Pham's bat back in the lineup. There was a couple times they could have used a right-handed hitting outfielder in this last trip here. And that will happen before too much longer. Now, the burning question is who goes on after that? Well, Tejada's in some jeopardy either way. He probably will not be here when Peralta comes back, and he might be gone even before then if you bring Pham up. But they've got a lot of options. And a lot of good ones for Mike Matheny, actually.
And with Maness, they said that they found some irritation, and there's a medical issue associated with it. He wasn't right. His velocity was down. Is there a chance that this can be a quicker turnaround than just going down to the minors? Because as good as the bullpen has been, he never got it going. He never got himself on track.
He had three or four decent games before that awful one in the ninth inning at Anaheim the other day. His velocity is down, and his location, his pitches are up, and that's a real bad sign for a guy who throws 89 or 90. I'm happy that he doesn't have to go down on a minor league option after being in the big leagues 3 years. He can be on the disabled list, and the next time he's in the minor leagues, he'll be on a medical rehab option, which can be as much as 30 days for a pitcher. So he won't actually have to go down to the minor leagues, I don't think, to get this figured out. He'll be on an option down there on a medical basis.
They brought up Keek Heffer to take his place. It's a guy that I hadn't followed very closely, but, boy, he looked pretty good, didn't he, Saturday night?
Except for one pitch, yeah.
One pitch, not so good. But,
he struck out four of the first five or six guys to face him. He was impressive in the spring, and he has shown the ability to get right-handed hitters out, too, although I think his role would be more as a left-handed specialist. Not quite like Choate, where you would hit pitch one guy and come out of the game, but more often than not, he'd be brought in to face a left-handed hitter.
And there's a similarity with Maness with Keek Heffer in that he throws strikes. He's known as a guy who doesn't walk a lot of batters.
Yeah, we'll have to see how this plays out. There'll be some games where he'll be in situations where the game might be on the line. They were a little farther behind when he came in the other day, so we'll see how that works. But I like him, and until Maness gets squared away, that's what they're going to do.
So the Cardinals are clearly in this pattern where they slap around the bad teams and struggle against the good ones. They got Colorado coming up now. Where do they fit in that? Do we expect wins this week or more losses? I see they're a game over 500, the Rockies.
Yeah, they just beat the National League champion New York Mets three games in a row, so I guess they qualify as a good team right now. They're 19-18, and the Cardinals are only, 20-18, I think. So Colorado's pitching is young and inexperienced in the rotation. They're not a good team away from home generally, but they've got some firepower in that lineup. Nolan Arenado, you talk about the best four or five players in this league, he's in that conversation, the great third baseman.
Grichuk put on a defensive clinic over the last couple of days after not getting the Pujols home run in Anaheim. But I think folks are still looking for that production, that power production from Grichuk. Do you see any signs that it's coming along?
Not too many. He did have some hits in a couple of those games where he got a double, got a single, ran the bases very well, especially last night. So there's not any reason not to play him. I think they can come up with Piscotty in right field every day and Grichuk in center field nearly every day. And the left field, if Holiday's going to play some first base, that could be kind of a rotating deal among Holiday, Hazelbaker, Moss, maybe Pham when he's back. So, but I think Grichuk should be out there. And I think the days of moving these guys, these young guys around too much, I think Grichuk and Wong are going to be in there almost every day now for a while.
Rick Hummel with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, joining us on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Commish, we appreciate the time. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, man.
Rick Hummel with us here. Cardinals off today, then taking on the Rockies and Diamondbacks this week. Like to think they would get some wins against these teams. Of six, perhaps.
And meanwhile, the Cubs just keep storming along.
They lost yesterday. Garrett Cole saying they're not the best team in baseball.
Well, they're 27-9. And you know what? I like to look at that run differential, Tim. I don't expect you guys can follow this.
I haven't heard of it.
But it's the difference.
That's where you take the whip and the ERA and you divide it by four.
That's not it at all.
What?
It's where you take the number of runs you score minus the number of runs you allow. And you come up with what I call a run differential. And the Cubs are plus 109.
And you divide by slugging percentage.
The Cardinals were barely that good last year after winning 100 games. They were like 100, plus 120 or something. And we're barely a month into the season.
So what are you saying? Are you saying that the Cubs are a flash in the pan?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying the Cubs are frighteningly good. Frighteningly.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of them.
Well, I think we probably ought to keep an eye on that wild card scoreboard. And who are the Phillies to be 22-16? The Phillies were supposed to be the worst team in the league, and they're staying up there with the Nationals.
You know what it is? When they play a Sunday night game, they wait until the next day, and then they fly out. That's why they're so successful.
Probably. Surprised me. You got to keep people on their normal sleep patterns if you can.
Doug, if you want to tighten it up, you can go to Evolve Personal Fitness, where I tighten it up. Your New Year's resolution was going to be the jump start. You told yourself that when the weather gets nice, that's when you'll start running. After spring break, when the kids get out of school. Too busy right now. Turns into too busy next week, in the next month, and after summer. That's when I will start. There is never going to be the perfect time.
No.
There will always be work.
Mr. Kennedy.
There will always be kids' games. There will always be vacations. But the one thing there won't always be is your health. Doug, it's Evolve's 8-week challenge. Okay. This is a challenge to you specifically.
Me.
Gives you the direction you need to get back to feeling good. Flexible workout times, efficient workouts, start moving better, get stronger, get leaner, feel better, period. Up to 4 workouts per week. Learn to eat without feeling like you're missing out, and you will be held accountable.
I will be?
Yes. It's high time. It's time for you to make sure that you get in shape, because if you don't, no one else will. The program kicks off this Saturday. You want to tighten it up? You're going down to Party Cove, and you're going to be on the back of a cigarette boat every weekend. Right. You need to look good, baby.
Okay. What if you just went out and you bought like 3 or 4 shirts that are bigger so as to kind of hide the extra 10 or 15, and they look pretty good on you? Is it okay to say, now's not the time?
Put it off a little bit?
Like a house coat?
When is it a good time?
I just got bigger shirts.
When is it a good time to put off your physical fitness?
That's the wrong message in the spot.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
The message is it's time now.
Ah, that's right.
314-849-7400. 314-849-7400. Evolve Personal Fitness, the 8-week training program. Group training starts this Saturday. Get in shape, girl. You're going to do it.
What if I'm working on a really nice boiler? Do I still want to go, or would that...
That'd ruin it.
Okay.
Joining us right now on the Appliance Discounter phone lines, brought to you by Gateway Sports Emporium. Former Blue and now member of the San Jose Sharks radio broadcast team, Brett Hedekin. Brett, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. I would imagine on the San Jose side, they might be kicking themselves a bit last night. That game was there for the taking, and nonetheless, the Blues were the team that got the win.
Yeah, no doubt. I thought both teams, to be honest with you, played real tentative in that first period. I mean, you look at, you know, coming into last night's game, 493 hits are what the Blues had on average, and it led all teams in the playoffs in average 35.2 hits a game, and they only had, what, 6 hits in the first period, so, and the Sharks only had 5. And I think any game throughout these playoffs, I mean, the Sharks would average between 15 and 20 hits in the first period. Not that they're a real physical group anyway. I think St. Louis is a more physical group than the Sharks anyway, but through the playoffs, I mean, you've got to be able to get physical. You've got to be engaged. And I thought both teams were pretty unliked or out of character in the first period. I think that game was for the taking for either group. And it was obviously Jori Lehterä's shot that found the back of the net on a turnover from Brent Burns, and a shot from Lehterä that found had some eyes and went the back of the net was the difference. So no doubt, I think the Blues are going to be happy about that one game that they snuck away with that either team could have had, but they've got it in their pocket.
In that second period, it looked like San Jose was clearly the better team in terms of talent, the way the two teams match up. How do you see the rest of the series going?
Well, I think, you know, there was maybe one line that I thought didn't have their best night, but I thought the other three lines for San Jose did produce some offense. They did move the puck in the offensive zone. They did cycle the puck and did a lot of little things right. And I think, you know, the one thing I hate teams that and people that use, you know, bottom six. You know, they talk about the bottom six forward. I just think that's a terrible term because you don't win a Stanley Cup with a bottom six. You win a Stanley Cup with a second six. You win a cup with 12 forwards that can all make plays, and you win with 6 defense and a goalie. I mean, that is what you win with. And I think with the Sharks and even with the St. Louis Blues, they've got really good balance. And I think this series will be about, you know, the second six, the guys that the third and fourth line that are going to be able to, you know, continue to match up against, you know, the Blues, the third and fourth line, and find ways to produce offense. And that's what really, to me, what this series will be all about is about, you know, other guys stepping up to the forefront. I mean, Jori Lehterä only had his second goal of the playoffs right there. That was a seeing eye shot. But those are the ones that matter. Those are the ones that will really make a difference here and to come out on top on the series.
As I was watching last night, it kind of looked like in the first period that both teams needed a little bit of time to get the intensity back, that maybe after playing a game seven, have a couple days off, they just kind of hit the ice thinking, well, you know, we're not facing elimination tonight. Let's get back into the groove. Did you get that feeling at all, too, that maybe the little bit of intensity was lacking?
Well, I think the intensity was lacking a little bit there. And, you know, just like the Blues had to go and get through Chicago, I mean, that was a huge nemesis that's been, you know, hanging over their head, is to try to get through Chicago. And it was a war. I mean, that series was tremendous. And they get through that one finally, and then they have to meet Dallas, and they kind of had maybe a little bit of an emotional hangover there, I think, like the Sharks did. And so that series went seven for them. And then I think the Sharks on their side, you know, their nemesis was the L.A. Kings. They had to get over them, and they did. And then they had a little bit of an emotional hangover at times against Nashville. And I don't think they played really their best hockey in that series, although the games that they played their the way I've seen them play, they dominated Nashville, kind of like game five, game seven there with the 5-0 win. So I think it takes time. When you go through one series, you get into a new series, you're trying to say, hey, how are we going to play this? How are we going to skin the cat? And I think both teams were looking at that there last night. I think both teams had a hard time really finding their game. But, you know, this is going to be a long series. At least I think it's going to be a long series. And I think both teams are going to find ways of, you know, finding their legs on a certain night and having their game, and they're going to get success. I think who knows who that will be on, obviously, game two. But it's always nice if you're St. Louis or anybody for that matter to have that one game that they've got in their pocket already, like I mentioned earlier. So, you know, 16 wins, it's a tough challenge. I've been there. I know what it's like. You're not going to have your best game every night. But, boy, when you can put a win in your pocket and get closer to those 16 wins, it's always nice.
Brian Elliott has been outstanding, in my opinion, their most valuable player by far, and they've had a lot of guys step up and contribute. What does it mean to a team to have, like, the same guy in there and play at that level?
Well, it's amazing. Cam Ward for us, for my team in Carolina in 2006, I mean, he was the Conn Smythe winner, and he earned it. He deserved it because of, you know, saves like Elliott made last night. I mean, the one on Joe Pavelski wasn't picked in the corner, but it was a great save. I mean, he moved from left to right, has pad down, and that was a tremendous save that he made. I know we tied the game at the time. And I think, like you guys were saying, like in the second period, they were starting to come a little bit. Had that gone in, it would have tied the game, and who knows what would happen after that. But when you get a goaltender that can steal a save like that, and you know he's got to steal two or three during the course of the game, that make the difference. And then he's got to make all the ones he's supposed to make, right? So he's been stealing two or three a game, and that's something that, boy, when you're a defenseman out there and you've got a goalie that's relaxed, that's going to steal a couple of saves a game, it gives you that confidence to maybe hold on to that puck a fraction of a second longer to make that right play. And it gives the team a confidence boost. No doubt about it, moving into every game and every period and every shift because you're relaxed out there. You're making the right play because you got a goalie that can steal a save.
I would think it might get in the other team's head, too, a little bit. When a guy's playing that well and the more you want to beat him, the harder it becomes.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think if you look at what the Sharks did in their first series, Jonathan Quick is one of the best in the game. I mean, they got to him. I mean, they got to him pretty good. And then you go into Nashville and Pekka, arguably, you know, it's one of the best goaltenders in the world as well, and they got to him. So I think that's the strategy with the Sharks, that they're going to get offense, they're going to get opportunities. Last night they had a few opportunities to get buried, but Elliott was his night. I mean, so I don't know if they're really per se, you know, scared that Elliott's going to steal the series. I just think they're going to get their chances. They're going to bury some. You're right, but you can't let that get to you if he continues to, you know, make those that two and three and steal in two or three a game.
That power play for the Sharks has been a gold mine for them. Obviously, one of the best in the league, and they got nothing in game one. Is that Elliott, or is that something that they'll try to fix?
No, this power play doesn't have any panic in it. And even when they have a game like they did last night, where they were purely not themselves with regard to moving the puck and a little bit lackadaisical in areas that I haven't really seen from that power play this playoff yet. So, you know, when you've got guys that have played together as long as those those guys have, and guys like Marlowe and Thornton and Pavelski and Burns, and you add Couture in there, these guys are all interchangeable, and that's why they're so dangerous. I mean, you look at the Washington Capitals, and they've got that power play that can obviously score goals with Ovechkin, but Ovechkin's always over on that, you know, that right side where he's got the one-timer, on the left side, I should say, but he's got the one-timer because he's that right-handed shot, ready to fire. And, you know, in the playoff time, guys are just going to stand in the way and block that shot, and they're going to sacrifice. And that's why in the regular season he can get that shot off. But it's really, you know, kind of one-dimensional, where this power play is really interchangeable. Those five guys can move anywhere, and they fill holes, and they get the pucks back, and that puck retrieval is so dangerous. I know Hitchcock talked a lot about that as far as how dangerous this power play can be, because it's late in the power play where they keep pucks in, they continue to work around, they tire out a penalty kill, and they finally, you know, you pay a price. So I just didn't think they executed very well last night. They, you know, had some passes that allowed the Blues to get the puck down, but they're going to be fine. Their power play is good, just like the Blues. This is going to be a great specialty teams battle as well. Like I said, second six, if you will, it'll be depth scoring and power play, finding ways to score big goals. And your guys just scored a big goal last night as well.
Brett, do you get the sense that the fan base in San Jose is as revved up and jacked up about this as they are here in St. Louis? I mean, this is a big deal, what's going on for the St. Louis fans. I don't know if they treat it the same way in San Jose. It doesn't seem like it'd be that kind of hockey hotbed type of area.
Well, it's they're ready in San Jose, too, but I think you're right, though. St. Louis, they're ready for a Stanley Cup. I mean, they've patiently waited. You guys have had some great teams. Matter of fact, you know, I was drafted by the Blues in 1988, played a couple of years here, and they love their hockey. I loved it. I did. I enjoyed St. Louis, enjoyed playing for the Blues. But I know they're ready for a Stanley Cup. And it was funny last night after that game was tied, after Backus scored his seventh of the year, Pavelski, you know, 34 seconds later, tied the game. It's like people got a little bit worried there for a second in the building. It was kind of got a little bit eerily quiet for a second, but then they realized, hey, this is a long game. It's going to be a long series, and I think the fans got back into it. But, no, I love it. The Blues fans, it got loud in that building last night when they knew they were closing that game out. So it's going to be a fun series, and the Blues fans are great, and I think they should enjoy this moment because, you know what, they don't come all the time. It's hard to do. To win a Stanley Cup, those 16 wins are tough, and so enjoy the ride.
Looking forward to Game 2 tomorrow night, and we sure as hell are enjoying this ride with the Blues now in their 15th game of the Stanley Cup playoffs this deep for the first time in 15 years. Brett, thanks so much for getting up early and joining us this morning, man. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for the patience. I'm getting on a regular this morning, guys. Thanks for having me. Look forward to it. Have fun in the series. Like I said, enjoy the ride.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you much.
Brett Hedekin with us here. He won a cup himself, so he knows the game. He won with the Hurricanes in 2006. Also a friend of the show. He accused the cat of wean-peeking, Doug Waite.
Right. That's why he left here, as I understand it. He'd had enough of prying eyes.
Right. Made some false accusations, and they caught up with him, run out of town.
That happened. He was run out. I believe he asked to leave because there was a certain sideline reporter who kept undressing him with his eyes.
You, sir, are the prince of disinformation.
This has been accurately reported time and again.
Gateway Sports Emporium, the presenting sponsor of the Brett Hedekin interview here on the program to get the Sharks' perspective. We'll get the Blues' perspective coming up next with Kelly Chase. Always look forward to Kelly Chase's interview. I just feel like Chase is enjoying the hell out of himself right now. Him and his former teammates, the city, the organization. I thought Hitchcock said something. I guess it might have been Friday.
I heard it.
Do you know what I'm making reference to? We're playing for more than just ourselves.
We're playing for the city.
Yeah. And the alumni, which is so strong with this organization. And I just feel like so many guys who played, but the city as a whole, so on board with this. And if it can continue into the Stanley Cup Finals, and my God, if it could happen with the Blues skating around the Scott Trade Center ice with the Stanley Cup. Holy moly. Holy moly.
It's not just the disappointments over the years with the Blues and the hunger for a Stanley Cup, but you factor in the Rams and what went on with them lying to everyone and then leaving town. I mean, this is a perfect time for the Blues to be as good as they are.
As much as we hate the Rams, we love the Blues that much.
And there were signs all over the place in L.A. for the Rams. That really ticked me off.
I noticed while they were playing in Anaheim, there was a season ticket. Is that, did they run that billboard throughout the course of the season? Did you? I know I'm putting you on the spot for something that you probably don't know or would have asked. I was curious about that because it wouldn't surprise me if there was intentional trolling. It has been that juvenile. Matt Hubols and Hank screenshotted this. I wish I would have. This is kind of a brief aside, and it's about 3 weeks late, but it did happen, and since Matt Hubols at Hanks did screenshot it, it's a fact. If you recall what the Blues lost to the Blackhawks in Game 5 when they had a chance to clinch that series, and Patrick Kane had the overtime winner, and Kevin Demoff favorited ESPN, saying that was the highlight of the night. And
he did.
And it's not like growing up in Santa Monica, he was a big Hawks fan.
No.
And you just go, God, it's just, it's so juvenile. You got what you want. You got your cash, and you're just going to troll.
But yeah, but I don't. I mean, you're talking about signage. I don't think it's, you know, they're trying to market the team in California.
Well, I get that. What I'm asking is, do the Angels run that billboard for all of their home games, or was that a unique tweak? I would assume it's the former.
I would.
The Patrick Kane favoriting thing. Strikes me.
We had a friend of ours say, "Yeah, I'm thinking of getting season tickets," and I was like, "Don't say that to me, you know.
And don't do it if you know what's good for you."
I said, "With all due respect, I hope the Rams lose every game by 60
points.
I'm
so fired up to watch their games and cheer for whoever the hell they're playing."
Yeah. And he was like, "Oh, sorry, I kind of forgot."
I've never really felt that. I don't feel that way about the Cubs. I don't feel that way about Kansas. But this is the first time in my life I actually feel that way about a team that isn't competing with the St. Louis team for a spot in a division or the playoffs.
Just because you hate the management to the core, the ownership, the guy who runs the team, all of them.
Unfortunately, I hold the league even more accountable because they were part of it. But it's not like I'm not going to watch the NFL ever again. I'm not that nice.
I won't watch it like I used to, that's for sure.
We got to take a break. Kelly Chase on the other side of the break, brought to you by GFI Digital.